Welcome to the Mindful Nomad Podcast. I'm your host, Miguel Gutierrez. This podcast is an exploration into the world of creatives, community leaders, and entrepreneurs. Taking a deep dive into their lives, focusing strongly on lifestyle, spirituality, mental health, and education. So grab a seat, relax, and join me for this exciting journey through conversations with other mindful nomads.
Cool. So I'll just get right into it. So welcome to another episode of Mindful Nomads. Today we have Ben Dussault. And the glorious thing about this is that Ben knows nothing about this podcast. I reached out really out of the blue. He's been on my list of people to podcast for about 3 years, and it felt like a good time to kind of reach out. So Ben, like, this podcast is all about mental health, mindfulness, community leaders, people doing things around lifestyle, and I obviously know you're putting in the work with those things. So yeah, I'd really love for you to just kind of give a bit of a introduction to yourself and let us know about you.
Wow, yeah, you really threw me in the fire there, because I actually had no idea. Well, first of all, before I get into the introduction, I just want to say I'm inspired by your introduction of, you know, your podcast and what you do, and your dedication and your commitment to it. I know of you through James Hamilton, and he you know, has spoke highly of you. I just never really knew much else other than his respect for you. So here's my introduction. My name is Benjamin Dussault, and I'm super grateful to be here with you, Miguel. I have been dedicated to mental health, my personal mental health, and also helping other people with theirs. Having access is really important for me personally, and also providing access for other people, whether it be through me or through other people, other practitioners and other sources, other tools. So yeah, I have been dedicated to this for a while, because I know how important it is for myself in terms of not just surviving, but also thriving in my life. So I'm really grateful to be here, man. Thank you for having me.
Amazing. So like, let's start from the beginning. I know you are a musician, so that's where it all begins, I guess, for you.
Yeah, man. Yeah, yeah. So I've been playing drums since I was 15, but I've been into music for so long. Grew up in music. Music was like definitely my first form of therapy, for sure. Yeah, yeah. And professional musician on tour. I know you have a question, but yeah. So just did it in healthy and unhealthy, and now hopefully healthy ways.
Well, that was kind of the question to kind of go okay. into that. And
let's go.
Yeah, really just tell us about how, because I know, I also know that you are, you don't drink.
I don't drink.
Was that always the case? Or was it a journey to get to that point?
Well, I'm a French Canadian, you know, European background. And my family is quite wild. So I started drinking early. I have a 9-year-old son, and I was thinking about this. I had my first beer probably while I was like 9 or 10 years old. Like, and not my first beer, but my first beers when I was like that age. It was just like, because, you know, it's like you're sneaking beers away from the party because everyone else at the party, your uncles and father and whatever. My mother didn't drink, and she does drink a little bit, I think, now for her health, but you know, most of my family drank. So it's just like cousins, myself would just sneak out at 10. So I'm thinking my son is 9. I can't imagine my son like just sitting, watching him like cracking beers and sitting on the couch reading a newspaper. I don't know what dudes do, but I think that's what they do, you know? So yeah, so I used to drink, and then I stopped drinking when I was 16. I got into straight edge. I got into, like, you know, I was into hardcore music. I was into, that subculture of like, we're going to rebel against, you know, people who are rebelling, like drinking was rebelling, but we already rebelled. You know, I was already rebelling at like 10 years old, and I was kind of tired of rebelling in that way. And it didn't work for me. So,
yeah. Nice. I think, going back, my first kind of alcohol was probably around the same, like 11, 12, sneaking alcohol at Christmas time, no one really knowing. Sorry, Dad, if you're... but yeah, like, tell us about you know, your journey as a musician? Because I do know that you were quite into it. You were in big bands and
I'll try to keep this short. I'm not really great at being concise, so I'm working on being concise. That's part of my my new formula of showing up like clear and concise. So yeah, I played music. I started playing drums at 15 because no one else wanted to play drums in the band. So I started playing drums, and then that led to me playing professionally on tour with different bands, several different bands, North American tours, European tours, and then like worldwide tours as well. So I got to travel, I got to see the world, I got to meet different people, and I did it sober. I did it sober in terms of like not drinking, not doing drugs. I wouldn't say that, you know, sobriety is like an interesting, you know, theme, and I don't want to go too deep into that, but like I definitely survive touring in my own way. I know other people survive touring in their own way by, you know, drinking, doing drugs, having sex, blah, blah, blah. Like the things that you would assume would happen because they do happen on tour. I just found my own way. I worked out all the time. I like, you know, tried to eat, and it was just like, it was a different form of numbing, you know, just to kind of make sense of that insanity that is the touring lifestyle, which I know anyone who's watching this who tours and who has toured knows exactly what I'm talking about. It's absolute chaos. It's crazy.
So you, regardless of whoever it is, they probably always find a way of escapism.
Totally, man. Totally. Mine was like thinking I was better than everybody else because I worked out and because I was jacked and because I ate well. And it was like, it was still a form of isolation. I still isolated myself from everyone because that was my survival tool. You know, I don't know what that was, man. We can go into it deeply, but people do that again. Like I'm repeating myself for a reason. We all do that. And like, for whatever reason in my head, because I struggle with self-worth, and I still struggle with self-worth, and I had so low self-esteem, and I still struggle with low self-esteem at times. I needed to like do things that set me apart from other people, but actually really kept me at a distance from everyone. And that's dangerous. Isolation is really dangerous. And it caught up with me really quickly, where I, you know, I was playing in my favorite band at the time. Madball is still my favorite band, arguably, in hardcore. And I was about to record a record with them. They asked me to record a record with them. And I was like, mental health, like life, like, do I choose life or do I choose to be on a Madball record? I was like, at the time, I was like, you know, having my name in a Madball record is kind of badass, you know? Let's just say life was a little bit more important, you know? And I say that like jokingly, but it was really apparent at the time that, I had to take care of myself, and I wasn't in a good place mentally. Yeah. I was like declining, you know, my mental health, which is why we're here talking about this, and my spiritual health were completely suffering, and my physical health was trying to keep up and I need to work out more. No, you can't work out anymore. Like, you can't work out anymore. You have to take care of the other things that are below the surface. It was all surface at that point, and then I had to go deeper. So yeah, I'm getting goosebumps right now, because it's like that. It's real, man. It's real. Like the bypassing of that, like, it's unfortunate. People don't make it, man. When you bypass for too long, it's like it. Yeah, it's a hard way to cry. It's a hard climb back up through that hole, you know? So, mm-hmm.
Talking about mental health, and we connected it to the music. Do you acknowledge that you had mental health issues before, and that fast-tracked it? Or was that the cause of the lead down the route of mental health issues?
If I understand your question correctly, was what I'm hearing you asking me is, well, did I find out I had mental health issues while I was on the road, or did I know I had mental health issues beforehand? Is that
Was it a fast track? Was the music life a fast, you know, it take you down the path further?
Yeah. And I think the reason it's like complicated for me is because like, and I said it earlier, music was one of my first forms of therapy. play music. Like I would play drums, you know, and I'm playing drums and smashing, and people are like smashing each other, and I'd be in the back, like somewhere in an alley, just like crying by myself, being like, why am I crying? I just played a show, everything is good. I'm eating, like, you know what I mean? Like I'm surrounded by people, and I'm like, there's people who like I love and love me, but why am I crying? Like, and it's, you know, and I played a show on Saturday, and both my sons were there. I know I'm going all over the place here, but the same, like I finished playing drums and I had my sons on stage with me. My partner was there, and I'm in the car driving, like my friend JS, who was there with me, and I just dropped off, you know, my partner Joyce, and my sons are with me, and I'm like, that was so beautiful. That was the best show. I was like, you know, like getting so emotional. I was like, right. Music moves us. Music moves energy. Like it's therapy. That's why people listen to music. And so I'm saying that because, you know, I'm a weirdo, man, so just bear with me here. But like, there's a reason I was thrown into music. There's a reason that I was brought into music. It's like, I don't know if I would have accessed my mental health in another way. I mean, maybe, but I didn't, because music was presented to me, and music was like, here you go, you're gonna play music, and you're gonna go on tour, and you're gonna do it sober, and you're gonna, like, you're gonna keep your values, your core values are gonna be present, you're gonna be swayed, people are gonna want you to do all the things that they want you to do, because you could potentially fit the mold, and it's like, again, when we feel lonely, when we feel isolated, we want to pull other people in, but we forget that we actually have to pull ourselves in. It's not about all the people around us, it's about us. And so again, I'm watching people like, hey, come join this crew, come join this, come be in this band, come. I'm like, and again, like Madball, love them. That was like, to me, that was like, there was no other band like that I would have wanted to play with. Like they were my favorite band. Like again, like, you know, and I could reference a whole bunch of other bands, and I won't. We're talking about Madball. It's like Madball asked me to play drums with them, and I knew I was suffering, Miguel. I knew I was suffering. I knew I needed to take care of myself. I was like, yeah, but it's Madball. Like you gotta say yes to Madball. You know what I mean? And so I did, and it also gave me further access because of who they are fundamentally, foundationally as humans. Like this is where I'm gonna talk a little bit about like the humanity within the scope of music. I would argue that my first like men's groups were the band members that I was in. And fortunately with Madball, we did a lot of communicating. We spoke a lot. There was a lot of conversations in the van. We went deep. Like we were like these are like some really tough individuals on the surface. Absolutely. You know, and they have a legacy. They have a notoriety to them. And we're talking about like deep emotional things in the van, and we're crying, we're connecting. It was like, it was confusing to me because hardcore is violent, and hardcore, there's something beautiful about hardcore as well, with like this community and, you know, there's this essence of, you know, we're going to do this together. And at the same time, it's like, if you're not with us, you're against us. So it's like, and that can be quite chaotic and violent. And so there's this weird juxtaposition happening where I'm playing in a very aggressive musically and also like historically band, Madball. Love these guys deeply. And we're also like, they're my brothers still. I love them. And they were my introduction to like, oh shit, like I gotta go deeper. Like I gotta take care of some stuff. And it was like weird because again, the presentation of you can continue to do this with us, and they were clear, we want you to continue with us, record the record with us, tour with us. And they're like, you have to do another tour with us. And I was like, and it gave me a chance to like step into like my needs, like, and I do this because like this is our core, this is who we are, and people are going to constantly try to pull us out of balance, out of our like our center. That's just the design of life. Life is going to be like, come over here, come over, like our partners and our, you know, my children, like they're just like, dude, like, you know, like it's, that's the reality of life. Life does that to us. And it's like coming back to self and coming back to like, okay, who am I? What do I need right now? Madball wants me to play with them, but what do I need? And I made that choice. I made the choice to quit touring at least for a long time to bring me back to like myself. And it's a long journey, man. I still, you know, collapse on the floor crying, like, who am I? And what? Like, you know, like that, like all those, you know, existential, like, you know, crises or whatever that happened. It's, and I come, and I, because I've done the work and I still do the work, and I haven't, I'm not done doing the work. There's just different work now. I can come back to myself and be like, all right, that was 24 hours of like deep crying, but we're back. We're good. You know what I mean? Like, so yeah, I know I'm all over the place here, but music is and continues to be one of my first like introductions to therapy to me.
So yeah, I mean, I love when you go off on a tangent, like just keep on going. It's fine with me. You don't have to be concise all the time. This is a podcast where you're allowed to just talk. So
appreciate that.
What sort of time frame was this? What age were you when this all was happening?
Yeah, so I was touring extensively with Throwdown. Throwdown did 4 years, 24 to, you know, there's a bunch of bands that in Montreal, Death Row Sin, Final Word, like we toured. And then that brought me to Throwdown with 24, like European tour, 24 Ozfest, like Warp tours, 24 to 28. Took like a little, at 28, Throwdown and I, like, we parted ways. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to go into, like, because I was, and you know, getting into, you know, helping people with their physical wellness, like fitness, you know, and, you know, strength and conditioning, training people on tour. I was training a lot of musicians and people who I toured with, the crew and whatnot. And I was like the workout guy on tour, you know, and it wasn't a thing back then. Like, it really wasn't. Like, if guys worked out, but if people worked out, they did it quietly in the background. Like, I like would take everyone's equipment and set up shop. And I'd be like, you're not using this. I know you're not using this. I know you're not using any of this. Give this to me. And I would set up shop. And then it started making noise. People started getting into it. And more people started congregating to these like gyms that I built on tour, which is super cool. And I did it because I, you know, again, I needed it, but it brought other people in. And so that was from 24 to 28, training people, like people started paying me to train them, training some of my favorite musicians. Like, you know, I'm like, what is going on right now? And then I was like, okay, you know what? I don't have to be on tour anymore. Like I can do this at home, and I could be with, you know, I could create family like and stability. And so I started training. And then Madball called, and I was like, can I go back on tour? And I still continued doing the physical thing, but again, like I'm repeating myself, like at 20, 29, going into 30, when it became real for me that like, okay, I don't know what 30 represented to me, but it represented something from a young age, like 30. Like I remember being young, being like 30, like, oh my God, like it's going to be so old. I'm 44 now. And it's like, yeah, it's like I'm turning 30, and it was really, it was really clear that I needed to take care of this guy. So yeah, so that's the timeline. So, but you know, we did it like hard, like, you know what I mean? Like hard, nonstop, especially with Throwdown. It was like 10 months of shows per year and then recording albums. And it was intense. It was like, we went in hard. Like it was a machine. So yeah.
So the fitness side of things is where I kind of know you from, because obviously you came with James over to the UK and did, well, first off, I didn't quite know what you did, to be honest. I knew that you people were in the stand doing mobility and stretching. And until I got to experience it when I was in Toronto, I didn't kind of know what was going on. But yeah, I mean, talk us through that, because that was a really interesting approach to, you know, the movement and the breathing and the feeling and being mindful when you're doing so.
Yeah, it's great. I still don't really know what it is that I do either, Miguel. So like, you know, I work with amazing people, and I have for many years, and my work, you know, thankfully has evolved, and I continue to push the limits in terms of what it is that I'm like allowed to do as a practitioner. Not at anyone's expense, of course, but just, you know, I feel the work that we did and the work that I've done, you know, we went to the barber conventions and James brought me with the reserver booth and Kyle was there taking photos and whatnot. It was all in the theme of like wellness, like, and community and conversation, connection, like the essence of like what this life is about in terms of like, you know, at least how I associate life is like, I find myself to be like needing touch. I need touch. I need connection. I need to like, I need to be able to like communicate with people. Like I can't do this by myself. So the work that I do, it's like, you know, I could easily just speak at you or tell you what to do. And that works sometimes, you know, especially in these ways, like, okay, Miguel, we're going to do some, you know, some face mobility or some neck mobility. I can talk you through it, but there's something about like manual, like connection, hands on, like, so, cause it's energy, man. And transference of energy in the sense of like sharing energy is super important. You know that as a barber, it's like you put your hands on someone, you feel them just like surrender and relax. And their system just goes, their nervous system goes from like fight, you know, fight flight to like, okay, like I'm safe. Like I got this. The buzzing of the clippers, you're hearing that, you know, the sounds are all that. Those are all things that bring us back to like, okay, I'm in a good place, hopefully. And at least that's my association to getting haircuts. And the same thing for me with my work, it's just about having a conversation with the individual. It's like, okay, what's happening with you right now? Let's go a little bit deeper, not too deep where you can't feel like you can't get out, because that causes people to really feel afraid, because, you know, it's like, we got to respect the layers. You can't go from like surface, like conversations, how's the weather? Was that food good? Like that, those conversations are like talking about, you know, what happened when you were a kid or something like that. Like those are big steps to take. And so with the work that I do, it's not so much, you know, talk therapy, but it's manual therapy. It's like getting people to connect with, oh shit, I got a lot of pain in my neck. Where's that pain coming from? And just having a conversation with our body part, can bring up a lot of information. It's just paying attention with a friend, you know, or paying attention to a friend with a friend that you haven't been with in a long time. And that's what I do with my clients. That's what I do with people. I'm like, just have a conversation with you and see what happens. They're like, I feel so much better. I'm like, yeah, because we're paying attention to you. It's that simple. You pay attention to yourself, you're going to feel better. You're going to feel a little worse because you're like, I don't know what this is. I don't know what to do with this. I'm like, I don't know which direction to go. Trust, you're okay. And then you start feeling better. You know, it's like the one step back, two step forward kind of, you know, structure. So the work that I do is really about getting people to open up and not to close up. Because I did that for so long, working out, like trying to be as shredded and, you know, armored as possible. And it was just a way of deflecting people away from me and to make it more difficult for me to go in. And so this is like, okay, I can still be really strong. Like, dude, I walk to school with both my kids in my arms. They're like 9 and 8 years old. It's like 130 pounds of weight. And I'm like, I can walk them to school because they're like, you know, they're still my babies. And they're like, dad, like, I want to get in your arms. I'm like, let's go. And it's like my workout, but it's also my work in. I get to connect with my boys. I get to be close with them, you know, and then they get to school and like, all right, dude, get out of here. Like, get out of here. Like, don't give me a hug. Like my friends are watching. And I'm like, that's cool. But I just carried you to school. Right. Like, you know, I know you're still my baby. So I use that, softness and also that strength, and they go hand in hand. And that's what I try to do with people. Like when we work, it's like, okay, soften up, open up. And there's a lot of strength in knowing self and knowing that, oh, I'm not limited to, like, you know, I'm using neck, cause a lot of us have neck injuries because we carry so much tension around the shoulders, holding so much weight up, you know, whatever the weight is that we're holding. And it's like, you're not limited to this anymore. You can go even further, though there's a price to pay, because now life isn't just here and here. Life is like, you know, you travel around the world, like you have a 360 degree, like rotation, like you get to experience that. And there's a price to pay for that. You know what I mean? Cause it's like connecting with people and learning new things and unlearning old things. That can be quite jarring for people who are just like, I'm here, I'm good in this lane. You're like, yeah, but look here. They're like, I don't want to look there. That's fine. You don't look there. That's okay. I respect that. That's, if this is your life right now, I'm gonna find you in that place and be like, you're loved, you're cared for, you're gonna be okay. And when you're ready to like look over here, just a little bit over here, like you'll see that there's just something else. Whatever it is, something else, not better, not worse, is something else, something different. And that's the kind of life that I want to subscribe to, you know, and that's the kind of life that I want to expose people to. So that work is just about opening life up, because the more we're open, the more we can let in and also let out.
So how does this combine with obviously your fitness work? Does it just come with it, or is it only for certain people, or is it just kind of whatever you think will work for that person.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it is based off the person's experience and history and where they come from and where they're going. And it's like, the work that I do is just about respecting the path that the person's on and being like, this is the path you're on. Okay, what do you want to do with that? You know, like I have I have musicians that I work with. I'm like, okay, well, you want to be able to play 2 hours on stage without suffering afterwards. And you can continue to do that night after night. Okay, that's what I'm going to set you up for. Or the conversation stuff coming up when we start doing the work, you're like, great. And you can play for 2 hours on stage. And also, like, this seems to be coming up in the session. And again, the deeper I go with clients, the more we can be like, all right, like, there's something happening right now. I don't know if you're present to it. And they're like, yeah, I feel it. Like, something's going on. I'm like, great. Well, I think we need to, like, address that. Maybe not in this session, but, like, it might be good for you to go talk to somebody about this that comes up, that keeps coming up in our session. You know, like, whether it be, like, anger, rage, or, like, you know, like, or joy. They don't let themselves experience joy and have a good laugh, like, where I'm like tapping on them, because that's, you know, tapping is so powerful, you know, it allows energy just to disperse, and you're like, start laughing and giggling. I'm like, oh, there you go. You don't have to be so, like, and I, you know, speaking from personal experience, like, just like having to be stoic and serious, and, you know, stoicism is not about serious, but anyways, like, being like serious and being like one note, it's like we can be more than one note, you know? So the work that I do is to open people up. And then if they're interested in getting, like, physically more conditioned or stronger, then we play. It's like, hey, we did the work where we can access, this is rotating nicely. Your body's moving nicely. Your back's not jammed. It feels connected. You feel connected. Now let's play. Let's see what we can do with this. Let's see what we can do with all this open, like, this openness, you know? And then I start sneaking in like exercises, you know? Like, they're pulling me, they're pushing me, they're throwing things, we're picking things up, like they're picking me up and carrying me, you know? That's like, it's like kid stuff. We just want to play again, you know what I mean? The older we get, the older I get, I'm always looking for new ways to play. I want to know that I can, like, jump up in a tree and climb it, and then my sons are like playing hide and seek, and they're like, where's dad? And I'm like, I, like, throw things down below. I'm like, dad can still do this, you know? Like, and then they get so excited. They're like, oh my God, my dad's in the tree. Like, that to me, like, is the kind of life that I subscribe to, and the people who work with me. And it's not a big percentage of the population, because most people are just like, I want to look good. I want to take my shirt off, or I want to take my clothes off for my partner or on the beach or whatever. And I just want to look good. I'm like, I respect that. There's other people for that, you know. Mine is a little bit more like, you know, conversational with self and you know, addressing the big threes: the physical, the emotional, and the spiritual. And those, to me, like, I have a hard time bypassing them. Like, I can't train someone without, like, being like, by the way, you know, this is happening. They're like, I don't want to talk about that. I'm like, I know, but it's like, why am I here? Just like, I get it. I also know why I'm here, but it's like, there's also a lot of amazing, you know, physical trainers that are really just focused on making you look good and getting you feeling stronger and feeling you, like, pain free. And they won't go to those places. And those are, they're important in the equation. You know, I'm just not that guy. Like, I'm a weirdo. I'm like, your dad keeps coming up in your work. Like, what do you want me to do? Like, every time we do the work, you're like, your daddy issues are there. Like, you want me to bypass that? Or, like, we could be like, yo, man, like, call your dad up. Like, just call him up. You know what I mean? Or send him a fucking, you know, letter or something. I don't know. And it's like, it's, you know what I mean? Like, I'm saying that vulnerably right now, because I know how weird it is to be able to connect to those things. And not everybody wants to hear it, so.
Yeah, I don't know. I notice you keep saying I'm a weirdo, and I don't think you are. That's
all right,
the thing.
All right.
It's just an interesting, unique approach that obviously allows the people to feel better, connect with themselves better, and you're using one of your skills, which is your intuition, to guide them along on that journey. So it's powerful. I often do that. I'm obviously I'm quite often like, I'm just joking. I'm just a joker. I keep, like, saying I'm these certain things, and Everyone, like, they can see it if they want to see it already. I don't need to label it myself, so.
True. Nice. I appreciate that, man. I appreciate that. I think it's a default of mine to just to kind of keep me in that lane. I'm weird, so, and they're like, yeah, but, and so I appreciate that. I'm opening up a little bit, Miguel. I'm opening up a little bit.
I would say more that, like, very interesting and intriguing rather than weird.
I receive, bro.
So I remember you also, you were going under the name Anchored Social Club. That was correct?
And that's right. Yeah. That was the old club that we had.
Yeah. And tell me a little bit about that, and then how you kind of evolved from that onwards.
Okay. Yeah, I was working at a really corporate gym when I first moved to the city here from. You know, from California to New York. Well, in New York, I wasn't living there, but I was traveling there for Madball, and then landed back in Toronto. I did my 2 years of, you know, corporate, and I'm not dissing on corporate. I think there's something really, like, important about these different structures in the world. But I did my time. I knew I was going to do, like, a sentence at this corporate space gym, met some amazing people, made some really incredible clients, went to a small private gym that a friend at the time was opening up. I was one of the first trainers there and brought my business there and developed my business there. And then it turned into, like, okay, I'm working a lot. I'm seeing a lot of people and arguably making a lot of, you know, it's all subjective, but I was making a lot of money doing what I was good at. And then it turned into, like, okay, well, if I'm making this much amount of money and I have this amount of clients and people that are interested in this, why don't I open up a club myself and take that money, invest it into like a building that represents the work, that represents the population, the community, that feel called to this style. And so Anchored Social Club was born. Took an old auto body shop from, like, the 1920s in Toronto, like, crazy spot. My friend Martin Farkas, who's a realtor and also, well, I don't know if I'm supposed to talk about what he also does, but anyways, he's an interesting character that exists in different worlds. You know, anyone who knows punk rock and hardcore knows Martin Farkas, I think, because he plays in some, like, amazing bands, but he's also a realtor and also helps people like myself, you know, getting spaces. So he got us a space, which is really weird that, like, a hardcore guy, punk rock guy got us this. Anyways, it makes sense. And so we got the club and everyone from the community just basically poured love and energy and their own abilities, skill set into making it what it was. And it was so beautiful, Miguel. We use like old boards from the beach, because I was training at the beach at the time, and construction workers down there were, like, tearing the old boardwalk up to make a new one. And I got to know them because I was there every morning. Like, hey, what's up, man? Blah, blah, blah. And then I was like, yo, what are you guys doing with these boards? Like, I'll take the pieces. Like, if you guys, and he's like, oh, you're the trainer guy. He's like, yo, Johnny or whatever. He's like, give this guy as many boards as he wants. They gave us like, dude, wood's expensive. And these are huge, like 16-foot like boards from the boardwalk in the beaches of Toronto. And they gave us like 56 of them or something like that. Got a U-Haul truck. I was like, dude, this on that day, got a U-Haul truck. Jay from the Cancer Bats was with me, because he was training with me, and he was like, let's go. So Jay and I are hauling wood into this U-Haul to bring it back to the club, using it to cover all the shitty walls, because they didn't give, like, it's an auto body shop. They didn't give a fuck about, like, aesthetics. They just wanted to clean, like, take care of cars, but I care about aesthetics. So, like, so we decorate it. Got some mats. We got one of the best, designers, Jay Pooley, like crazy, like award-winning dude, like he's got this mania, like to design it. It was a dream, man. It was a dream. Like, people would walk in there like, what is this space? Because you would never know from the outside because the branding was so minimal. Like, I had, like, I didn't even have Anchored Social Club. I don't even think I had a painter come and do some really cool, like, paintings on the outside to look like, you know, to have graffiti. So it looked like this rough clubhouse that people, maybe it's a boxing gym, maybe it's a bar, maybe it's a, we don't know, you know, maybe it's like a weird, anyways, doesn't matter. It could be anything. And then, he wrote Anchored Social Club in big letters. I was like, yo, cover that up right now, bro. I don't want that up there. He's like, what? I was like, cover it up. I don't want Anchored Social Club up there. So he, like, spray painted over it. And then I just took like, I took like paint. This is so James Hamilton too, because we're very, very the same in this way. Like, as like, anyways, very creative in that way. It was like, I took like chalk and I went on the door, on like the, you know, the glass door. And I from the one side wrote out in my letters, Anchored Social Club, like very old boxing, like 1950s boxing gym. And then went on the other side and painted it. And I was like, and then it just looks, and there's vintage when you walk in, there's vintage clothing, because I love vintage and I love selling and, you know, buying and selling vintage clothing to friends or whatever, whoever. And so there's like a stack of vintage clothing when you come in, cool, you know, Harley shirts and blah, blah, blah. And then you walk in and it's like this gym, open space. And it was so rad, man. We had bands come through, play shows. We had like art shows. We had community like dinners, and like it was so, we had it for 2 years, and they tore the building down and built, you know, Toronto, so they built condos, and it made a lot of really positive noise, man. People from like other, you know, other countries and would reach out to me like, dude, I love what you've done with this club, I'm gonna do the same thing. Because we didn't have weights, we had like rice bags and lentil bags, like, you know, I would no, straight up, like, because my friends and clients at the time, they owned this import company, East Indian Company. And they were like to provide us with like these massive bags of like lentils and rice, and then they reinforce them. And that's what we were using to like pick up and throw. I was like, it was so crazy. I was just like, I want to use, like, if I'm going to lift weight, I know if the weight drops and the bag opens, then we can have a cookout. Like, I'm not going to eat iron. Like, I don't eat iron for breakfast. Like, I want to eat lentils and rice for, you know, for a meal. So that was like my concept. And the people that came, like, again, we did a lot of partner work, partner powered, like, you know, climbing each other and using each other as our form of resistance, and also our way of connecting with like self. Like, when I go to the gym, I don't really go to the gym, but I go to the gym now with my partner because she likes the gym. So I'll go to the gym with her. But when I train, I should say, when I work out, it's like, okay, how am I feeling today? What's going on today? What am I looking at today? What am I looking at today? And what do I want to do to open and to also reinforce and strengthen that part of me that feels a little like tender, that feels a little bit like it needs extra love and attention. Not punishment, just a little bit of like reinforcement and pushing, you know, to the direction of wellness and, you know, betterness, if you will. So Anchored Social Club was that. It was like, hey, we're here. There's like ropes that we can hold, and the person's climb. It was so cool, dude. Like climbing each other and then you see people like crawling with someone on their back. It was wild, man. People from the outside where you walk, because it's on Queen Street, like a busy street in Leslieville. And you know, busy street in Toronto, Queen Street East, and they're walking, like people are walking by hearing people laughing and shouting, and like when do you hear that coming out of gyms? Like most of the time it's like, you got your ear protection, whatever, your device to protect you from communicating with other people. You have your bench, make sure no one takes your bench, make sure no one takes your equipment, stay there and then work out and then stay and then come back and just protect. It's like, It was none of that. It was like, we work out together, we move together, 40, 45 minutes, an hour tops. And people leave there being like, all right, I worked on my physical well-being. I also got into the social well-being, being with other people, not just being close to people, being like with people, connecting with people, sweating and breathing and sounding with people, laughing. And people would cry because they're moving energy. It's normal. It's emotion. And it was powerful, man. It was powerful. You know, so Anchored Social Club.
Did that was that pre-COVID that it closed?
Yeah, 2016. So I kept the name going, and at the times, so we're going all over the place here, but it's still in the theme of like wellness and values and well-being. And we had two sons back to back, you know, their mother and I, Jack and Leo were born. Like back to back, like Jack, December 2013, and then Leo, April 2015. So a year and a half apart. And so we're trying to do this all while being a father, all while trying to, you know, support my partner at the time, their mother, who just had two babies back to back. And it was crazy, man. Like we didn't know how to do it. We didn't have family. We didn't have any support systems around us. We didn't. Like we had no family. We did it by ourselves. You know, and we had friends that tried to help, but we didn't really know how to, I don't think both of us knew at the time how to ask for help. Like, we just didn't have that we didn't have access to vulnerability like that, to be like, I need help. Can you help me? And so both of us just were doing this. And then she's an actor. So she went off and started working a lot, and she was gone a lot. And I was like, well, I want to be with my sons. I want to take care of them. And I'm also tired of burning out every month because I'm working so much. I was like, parenting, anyone who knows parenting is not easy, man. Parenting children is like, you talk about mirrors and being exposed to self and like therapy and like having access to information. Children are that on like steroids. It's insane. It's like, yeah, like I could speak, we could have a whole other hour long conversation just around parenting though. It was like apparent how much support I needed and how much like work I still had to do on myself when I was face to face with my sons being a parent, and like it was a parent. And so it was a tough time. I don't really know where I'm going with this. I guess it's because I could go all over the place with it, but I taking care of my sons was the next phase of my life. It was really like, okay, now I'm gonna like dedicate myself to being a father. And not being a caretaker for everybody else, I'm going to be a caretaker for my sons. And so we can argue what the time was, but yeah, I've been like doing that mostly now, like where I have some clients, I see some people, I try to do a bunch of different things. I guess I get really vulnerable and very emotional when I talk about this, because it's like, it's a big deal for me, but there's no recognition in terms of like, I made $250,000 this year being a father. It's like, there's none of that. It's like, I don't even know what I did as a father this year or the last X amount of years. I just like, I know when I'm with my sons, I know when we connect and what that's like, but it's not something you can really like, here's the proof. It's like, there's none of that. It's humanity. It's like, we're just riding these waves. And yet I've dedicated myself to being a father and being like, okay, I know most men out there are crushing it and doing it like through the form of like supporting their family through financial stuff. And like they work hard, they make money and they support their family with finances. They have the home, they have the food, they have like the cars, and they have the, whatever the things, they have the trips, they can take their families on trips. I don't like, dude, I'm saying this like vulnerably, like, and, you know, hopefully authentically, like I don't have that flex right now. I don't. Like, I live in a one bedroom apartment with my sons. We sleep on like a mattress on the floor, and like, you know, I'm getting emotional now, like, and bunk beds, but we have a swing in the house, and my kids are flying off the bunk beds, and I'm like I'm exercising with them, and we're wrestling, and it's like, and they eat really well, and like we play, we go outside and play in the park together, and I take them to the show with me because they're with me, and I'm like, you guys want to come to the show with me? They're like, hell yeah, I want to take the show. Like, no, say that. But they're like, yeah, Dad, we want to come to the show. I was like, great, take them to the show. It's like, I don't know what I'm doing as a father. I didn't even know what I'm doing. I was doing like, I don't really know what I'm doing as a human, though I trust that it's going to make sense in time. And I have to put my faith in that, you know? And it doesn't look, again, like the immediate gratification of like, all right, I made a lot of money. I'm safe. I'm good. Okay. Or, you know, whatever all the other quick, like the quick rewards are that sometimes life, don't get me wrong, I love making money, but parenting is not that, you know? So
I think one thing that comes through there is that it's something I've been echoing for the past couple of years when people ask me about like, you know, balance and life and stuff. And I'm just happy with the little wins now. I'm happy with the little things, experiencing the day to day, going for that long walk, getting some fresh air. You know, just living. Like, I've had a lot of money in my bank before. I've had not a lot of money in my bank before. And as long as I'm okay, as long as I'm healthy, as long as I'm eating okay, I'm fine with that. Yeah.
Yeah, Miguel.
Yeah, you're showing up for your sons. That's the most important thing, I think. And, you know, that's what comes through there. And plus, you have a sound engineer next door, so...
Dude, like, we're doing this because Chris Krelia... incredible sound engineer. He recorded our band twice, and he's recorded some of my favorite records in like punk and hardcore. And he does, you know, a lot of different things, R&B and whatever, hip hop. He's my neighbor. Like, you talk about abundance. Like I'm in his studio right now where he records. Like, I hear the artist he records because the wall's thin. You know, it's a nice brick wall, but it's thin. We can hear each other. And I'm like, yo, this dude, my friend, is recording this artist next door right now.
It's crazy.
I'm not in a bad place. I'm not in a bad place right now. This is a good place to be, you know? Yeah. But again, it's like it's, you know, I know we can, we'll, you know, maybe hopefully do this in the future, but like, it's tough for me to change my mindset around, like, what does it mean for me to be a man? What does it mean for me to be a provider? What does it mean to be a support system? And I would argue that I'm still kind of stuck in that, like, that place. If I don't have the ability to pull out my credit card or cash or whatever, that my value is less because that form of value is not the same as it was in the past for me, you know? So it's an interesting change, and it's new. It's arguably like the newest thing that I'm working through right now, which is like, okay, I'm still valuable, even though my bank account doesn't show high value. Like, just because my bank account doesn't show high value, I'm still high value.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think, finances is just, it's one of those things. It's as well as life. It's not linear. It's up and down. It's comes and goes. And the sooner you realize that, like, I think, and appreciate that, I think it's easier to get along with. But I mean, when you're speaking it, you know, in your mind to yourself, it's not quite so easy to get past it. So,
And they're moments, right? They're moments. They pass. Exactly. They change. Exactly. Life changes. Things happen. And as long as I have a community around me, I know, and like love and like health, like you said, you know, connection to self and others, genuine connections, I'm going to be in a good place. I trust that deeply.
For sure. I know we've got about 10 minutes left, so I really just want to get into your newest kind of community that you've built. I had a quick look at the website and what you're a part of. I didn't ask you about it too much beforehand because I wanted to ask you on the call. So can you just, tell us a little bit about it? Because it's something I definitely align with quite well. So.
Okay. In the recent years, I've said yes to getting back into collaborations with other people, not just being by myself and being that lone wolf. So I collaborated with Unbounded, and Unbounded have their own structure and their own branding, their own business model, and they've taken people like myself, and we've built these relationships where we support each other. So they have, you know, they're very clean in the way that they show up, very corporate, very dialed in a way that I'm not. And we complement each other. So I take my movement practices, you know, partnered powered, like working out together, moving together. And then we take them to their retreats and get people to like connect deeper. And it's incredible to see to see what happens as a result of bringing those flavors together and creating those, you know, those meals, so to speak, for people to consume and to be like, whoa, what is this? Like this thing. So Unbounded would be one of those collaborations that I've been involved with, involved with in the last few years. And they're, you know, cold exposure. They're really immersed, no pun intended, in that world, and taking people out of their comfort zones and exposing people to, and actually Chris, who is space I'm in, he's a part of the Unbounded team, now as well. We run this group called the Rage Retreat, which was and is because there's a women's group starting now, and it was formerly a men's group, and we still have the men's group, and Chris is one of the leaders, I'm one of the leaders, and our brother Kadrian is one of the leaders, and of course there's brothers that come out to the group, and they've been steadily coming out to the group, and they're kind of like, hey, I want to like be part of this, I want to like do the you know, like you could see that they want to step forward, and they want to bring their their being to the doing of the class, the programming that I came up with. So now there's a women's group starting, and it's the Rage Retreat. And again, like, it's all the things we talked about, basically. It's just like the physical, emotional, spiritual connection. And we did it with Unbounded because a lot of us, you know, are going through the certification that Unbounded is providing to be, you know, a sound practitioner for cold exposure, because it's, you know, cold exposure is, it's a real thing, man. You just don't just jump into cold water and expect that, like, you're, you know, it's like, it's a really dense and intense form of therapy, and it works. It just, there need to be certain, like, you know, protocols put into place to make sure that people are safe. So we're I've been training and training with other people, training self and training with others, and now also helping other people be exposed and learn what it means to get into cold water, you know, and what happens as a result of going to cold water. And in the rage retreat, we do some of that. The summer months are a little bit more difficult because the water gets a little bit warmer over time. But the water here in Ontario doesn't stay warm for very long. It stays warm for 2 months and then it gets right back to cold. And so we're very lucky that we have access to that. So the Rage Retreat is a group, Unbounded group. And taking all that, like, partner powered stuff that I do, like the working out together, and bringing that to those different groups and those different structures, if you will. So that's kind of what's going on now.
I think the most incredible thing over the past few years is that men's groups are thriving. You know, men's mental health is such an important thing.
Yes, brother. Yes,
I love that. As well, that your work for so many years has guided you to kind of just build communities and work with people working together and bettering each other. And that kind of works so well with men's groups and, you know, building that community as well.
How many men, like, beyond sitting in a barber chair, like, you know, like, getting touched, like, how many of us are allow ourselves to be, like, held by another man? We're not just the ones holding all the time.
Yeah. It's something we don't do enough of. And people say, you know, I mean, there's often, like, disagreements. People say men do talk, men don't talk. But like you say, it's not just talking. That's part of being made to feel loved, not just being listened to. It is being held. It's being, you know, looking into someone's eyes, you know, whatever it may be, and just being comfortable, vulnerable, and being allowed to feel how you feel in that moment with other men is special.
That's it. That's the holding. That's what we're talking about, is like you sharing something and I just listen. I don't try to fix you. I don't try to save you. I don't try to, like, make you better and give you coaching. It's like just holding space, man. Just being like, how are you feeling? What are you going through? And just trusting that that's okay. That's enough. You don't have to have more. You don't need to be like fixed. Again, I'm going to come back to that because we're not broken. What sucks is when we, like, share something, it's like, okay, this is what you got to do. You got to do this. You got to do this. It's like, okay, like, chill. I'm just sharing how I feel. It's like that in of itself is so valuable for men, just to be listened to.
I think that's the special thing about human beings in general, is that, like, how you're feeling in the morning can be very different from at night. So when there's this traditional route of, oh, you're depressed, you take this, or you're anxious, you write this down, you're fixed, it doesn't work that way.
24 hour, last week I had a 24 hour, like, basically meltdown. I just, like, crying, couldn't stop crying. I was like, yeah, 24, let's say 24, it's like a full day. And I because of the work and because of the space that I've been in, I'm like, I know I'm going to get out of this. I know that it's going to pass, because I've seen it happen so many times, and I've let myself collapse in these spaces often enough where I felt the breakdown and then I felt the build backing, like the building back up. I felt that, and it's, and I forget sometimes when I'm in it that I'm going to get out of it. But I remind myself with the coaching, and also, and I have, fortunately, other people that, like, how's it going, man? I'm not just like, good. I'm like, I'm melting down. I'm losing it right now. They're like, just remember, it's going to pass. I'm like, I know. Thank you for the reminder. I just need to hear that. It's going to pass. So if anyone is listening to this, I'm telling you, it's going to pass. It might be 24, 48 hours. It doesn't matter. It's going to pass. And lean on someone. oh my God, like men's work, we got like leaning, like the work I do, like the partner powered stuff, like again, leaning, feeling someone else's like strength. We don't always have to be the ones, the pillar, the only pillar that exists. It's like, it's not possible. Miguel, I need you as a pillar, bro. I need you as a pillar. I need to be a pillar as well. We need to be able to lean on each other when it's appropriate and when it's necessary. We can't do this stuff by our own. I can't do it by my own. It's impossible. On my own, by my own, you know, whatever, through my own. It's like, yes, it's happening through me. And yes, it's happening because I've called it in. And I also know that there's people around me that I can lean on and it'll pass and they can lean on me when I'm ready to get back into that pillar mode, you know?
My next question was going to be, what was your advice to someone with mental health issues? And it's like, it'll pass. You know, that you kind of said it.
It'll pass. I feel so sad that some of our brothers, you know, speaking specifically of the men, they got stuck and they stayed stuck and then they're gone. They're gone. They're not here anymore. Energetically, yes, they're here. We feel them. We still feel them. But fuck, let's stop that shit. Like, let's just trust that it'll pass and we can lean on the other people. We don't have to be the one that everyone relies on, the one that everyone leans on. We don't have to be that anymore. That's done. That's an old narrative. It's not happening anymore. That's in the past. Even if it feels like it's still happening, it's not happening. The things that happened, we can change them. We can change them so quickly. It's just being like, okay, I know that happened, but is it still happening right now? Like looking around, is it still happening? No, it's not still happening. I can still feel it, but I can trust that it's not happening anymore and I can move through that and reach out to people. I know it's, and you know, like that's the tough thing for a lot of men is the reaching out. I'm not good at it, man. I'm not good at it. But I don't have a beautiful little package for this. I don't. Like I don't have a nice presentable package for what it is to reach out because I'm not good at it. But I trust that it'll pass, like we talked about, and that there's someone waiting there to be like, yo, I'm so glad you're here. Fuck, I've missed you. Like, I want to hang out with you, but you were gone for a while, but I'm glad you're here. And just remember that, like, there are people who are looking forward to seeing us when we come out of the shadows.
That's sick. Well, I know you've got a session soon, so I just want to say it was such a pleasure to talk to you for this, you know, even though it's such a short time. You're a very inspiring person. I've always loved your energy from, you know, the short moments we had together in Toronto. And I look forward to doing this again at some point, hopefully in the future. Hopefully we can do some of the work together. And yeah, if anyone wants to find you, they can find you on Instagram at
benduso.co.
That's it. Thank you so much, Ben.
Miguel, I really appreciate you, man. Thank you. And you're welcome. I'm so grateful to be here. Beautiful, brother.